KALW.
So I guess we were in the wrong area. I ended up getting shot.
Sports can often be a ticket to bigger and better things.
Everything that I had accomplished, making it to Europe and playing for an international team for USA, it got put in the shadows.
In a new story from Uncuffed, what it's like to chase and lose a big dream. Plus, we meet an indie folk artist who explores the power of vulnerability in her music.
You don't have to have the loudest voice. It'll touch someone as long as you're being authentic.
And the afterlife of a retired Bay Area transit icon.
For me, it's always about preservation and keeping Oakland, Oakland. And a BART car is a part of Oakland.
The last stop for BART's legacy fleet. That's coming up. I'm Hannah Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Last month, thousands of people gathered at Oakland's MacArthur BART station to say goodbye to the last of BART's original trains as they made their final run on April 20th. The last stops for most of these cars will be the scrapyard and the recycling center, but a handful will be saved and repurposed to become something completely new. KALW's Cheryl Kaskowitz has more.
At first glance, the crowded scene at the MacArthur BART station on Saturday could have passed for any community celebration, with food trucks, a kids' coloring area, a raffle booth, and a merch table. But looking closer, it was clear that this was a particular kind of party. People of all ages wore BART t-shirts, BART hats, and BART-themed ugly holiday sweaters. They posed for photos at a replica showing off the train's signature slanted front, and the line for BART merch snaked around the plaza. This was an official farewell ceremony for the legacy fleet of BART trains, designed with a space-age look back in 1972. Which will now be fully replaced by new trains. People waited in a line that stretched around the block to take a final ride. Some brought memories of the early days of BART.
I remember looking out the front window, and I remember the digital speedometer registering 80 miles an hour.
That's Eric Petrel from Berkeley, who says his family took BART within its first week of service from MacArthur Station to Fremont.
I was 11 years old. I was amazed.
The event felt almost like a county fair, but everyone wasn't feeling like celebrating. Wesley Hinkle is a 15-year-old train enthusiast. He came to Oakland today from Vacaville. He dressed for the occasion in a bygone railroad conductor's uniform, complete with hat, suit, and vest.
Well, it's a very somber event. You know, the legacy trains have been operating for 50 years and been giving the Bay Area movie. This event is like a final coup de grace, a final hurrah, a final award.
All of this might seem at odds with BART's futuristic vibe, but for railroad enthusiasts like Wesley, the original BART cars are simply the next chapter in a long history of trains. Wesley is a volunteer with the Western Railway Museum in Suisun City, near Fairfield, which will soon be the home of three repurposed trains from the legacy fleet. Part of a new permanent exhibit on the history of rapid transit. Most of the trains from this legacy fleet will be stripped and sent to the scrapyard to shred their metal for recycling. But a handful will live on as something completely new, repurposed for projects selected from proposals submitted 3 years ago. And one of these projects will bring a legacy train deep into East Oakland.
For me, it's always about preservation and keeping Oakland, Oakland. And a BART car is a part of Oakland.
That's Champ Stevenson, the executive director of the original Scraper bike team. It's an East Oakland organization that offers programs in bike safety, bike mechanics, and bike art to kids in the neighborhood. They'll be repurposing a BART car to serve as a community bike shop in Arroyo Viejo Park.
And preserving, you know, the legacy car, we also want to make sure that we are preserving our communities that we're going to be putting it in.
On the station platform, passengers boarded legacy cars to retrace BART's first route from MacArthur to Fremont. I asked the train's operator, Keith Dixon, what he thought about these old trains.
I'm gonna miss it.
gonna miss the look, the new things, it's the future, different sound. So you're gonna have to get this on a recorded or listen to some old newscasts in order to remember these one day. So it's definitely a legacy in this part of the Bay here.
In Oakland, I'm Cheryl Kaskowitz for Cross Currents.
Cheryl is a fellow in our Audio Academy. You can find more of her work at klw.org/crosscurrents.
Train, train, train. I've got a thing about trains. I get a sad kind of feeling when I see a passenger train. In this fast-moving world that we live in, nobody rides much these days.
Maybe you're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. As a teenager, Danielle Ruiz was on track for a promising career as a soccer star. It was a big deal for him and his family. Not only did they all love the sport, playing soccer was set to be Danielle's ticket to a better life. The game was supposed to keep him out of trouble. But somehow, trouble found him anyway. Uncuffed producer Luis Gomez talked to Danielle about the rise and fall of his big dream.
I started playing soccer when I was 5 years old and never stopped. My dad was the one that got me into that. He was really into me and my brother playing soccer. He knew where we were being raised at and all the drama and violence around us. And I think one of the main reasons was to keep us away from it all.
Mom, you would say, was a soccer mom?
She was a soccer mom. She was very supportive. She was all of our soccer mom because not very many parents could make it because of work and stuff like that, or transportation.
I got this newspaper article that I have before me. I'm gonna read it to you. Daniel Ruiz scored a goal on a 40-yard shot 5 minutes into the second overtime to propel the Oilers past the stunned Highlanders.
It was to qualify us to one of the, championships right there. And I was the man. I was real good at placing the ball, and I could curve it with my right, I could curve it with my left, or either way too. I'm not just inside of the foot. I mean, I could use the outside of my foot and curve it the other way if I wanted to, and I was pretty good at it, man. I'm very confident right now because I can remember all the things I used to do. But if you asked me back then, I would have been like, yeah, I'm all right.
So at this time, you're already getting noticed by scouts, right?
I was in the boys club on the 14s. This is the first trip we took, which was to Minnesota. The trip alone, it was like, wow, we're leaving the city, the state. After that, I went to play for another league team, which was called Saprissa. That was a good team, man. My dad thought it was a good idea to get me involved. It was a different neighborhood. These kids, they had a little bit more money than my family. They played for the district team. They played for the state team. They were able to travel to those places and have their children go and try out. And now that I was on that team, I could go with them. So it opened the door for me as far as to jump in with them. Like, oh, you guys are gonna start doing this? Well, can I join you guys? I want to try out. Can I go? And my dad put it up to me to work my way in there with them, and I did. First, I started playing with the District 4. And the tryouts, that was crazy. It was a lot of people there. It was a lot of people. I looked at everybody, and I was like, wow, how am I going to be noticed out of all these people? But obviously, I made it to the team, and from there, I got noticed to go play for state. And when I got noticed to go play for the state, we got noticed by the international team, they invited us to play in Europe.
In Europe?
In Europe.
For what team?
USA.
So for the USA team?
USA.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. We went from Oakland to New York, I think. And from New York, we flew to Belgium.
You played your first game. How did it go?
I think we won the first game. We won them all except when we went to play to go to the finals. We got sat out, and so we was drinking, I think a little six-pack or something. You know, me and my friend was partying, and one of the chaperones caught us, told the coach, and the coach sat us out. That game that we were supposed to play to go play for first place. So our team lost. You know, that hurt.
How long were you out there?
I think it was 2 weeks. When we got back from Europe, you know, I was excited, man. I wanted to tell my family all about it. You know, I had gifts, you know, for everybody, and even my daughter that was newly born, and I couldn't wait to get home. Here I am getting out of the airport, and my mom, she went to pick me up, and I'm talking to her about it. I'm tearing her ear up, you know, and we're on the freeway going back home, and you know, I see some of my friends on the freeway, and you know, I've been gone a while, you know, and they're like, "Hey, what's up? Where you been at?" You know, yelling through the window, and I'm like, "I can't hear you guys." You know what I mean? They're like, "Where you been at?" So I'm like, "Oh man, I just got back, getting off the airport," and they're like, "Let's go kick it." And you know, my mom, she was real cool, man, and she knew they missed me, and I wanted to go hang out, and so she's like, "You want me to pull over? You want to jump in with them? Go hang out with them before you come home?" And I was like, "Yeah, you know, if it's all right." And she said, "Yeah." So she pulled over and she let me out, and I got in with those guys, and we took off. We hung out, and at the end of the night, we went to a liquor store to make one last liquor pickup, you know. And we seen some guys that we were in the wrong area, I guess you could say, but I ended up getting shot. It hit me in the leg and in my hamstring and in my finger as I was getting out of the car to stand up and run. And luckily, they had already unloaded the whole clip, and they turned around and ran. And that was the beginning of the end of my career. I was 17 years old. I never got to tell my family how it was, other than my mom, a little snippet of it, but I never talked to my brother about it, my sisters, no, to nobody. My friends, everybody was just happy that I didn't die that day. You know what I'm saying? So everything that I had accomplished, making it to Europe and playing for an international team, for USA, it got put in the shadows. It was hard, though. It was hard knowing that was going to be the end of my career. You know, after wanting to just help my family and be somebody for them and make my parents, my father proud, and just ruining it all just because I wanted to hang out with my friends. It was heartbreaking.
That was Danielle Ruiz speaking with Uncuffed producer Luis Gomez. And if you're a regular Uncuffed listener, you may know that Luis Gomez was released from Solano State Prison and is now back home. We send him all our best. That story from Uncuffed was produced with help from Kathy Novak, Sonia Paul, Angela Johnston, and sound designer Eric Maserati E. Abercrombie. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. The producers fact-check content to the best of their ability, and all content is approved by an information officer. Hear more by subscribing to Uncuffed on your podcast player. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we'll meet August Lee Stevens, an indie soul and folk artist from Hercules. She's a graduate of Oakland School of the Arts and just released her debut EP called Better Places. For this edition of Bay Area Beats, Stevens discusses her musical career and what it's like producing her own music in this piece from reporter DeAndre Ball.
Patience, it just takes time, he said. Love already lost enough.
In real life, I feel like I'm more introverted and quiet, but through my music is one of the like biggest places really I get to express just how I'm feeling and kind of get to open that up. And there's something really freeing about being able to do that to a bunch of strangers too. So I try to be as vulnerable as possible through the lyrics, through the musical choices I make, and through like what I share before each song.
Way too young. Without another minute, I'm rushing towards the end. There's a life I wanna live, but it's hard to get.
Hello, my name is August Lee Stevens. I am a local artist, musician, and that's what I do. Play, I sing piano, I write music.
Wish you could see all the beauty there's left to be found.
I grew up in Hercules, California, kind of back and forth between there and Oakland for most of middle and high school.
With every doubt, so don't let it be all in my head. Cause I don't wanna
My parents both had a very big like CD record collections and they would play their music all the time. So I would hear Miss Education of Lauryn Hill, like those songs are always in my head. When I was 8, my brother and I started a neighborhood band and we like forced some of our neighbors' children to join us.
I can't keep on trying all on my own.
But we had a few shows, like we would do block parties or something and perform with the band.
Looking for new answers, but
shout out to everyone that participated in that. And I hope the videos of it never come up.
I just keep trying.
So for high school, I attended Oakland School for the Arts. Shout out to OSA. And I actually went there from 7th to 12th grade. So I graduated from there and I spent, I think, 6 years there.
Had a lot on my mind these past few days. But if I'm being honest, it's more like
I think that was my early and like most pressing introduction to what it looks like to pursue the arts. It was a blessing to see how committed they were to exposing us to different artists. They would bring in different people for like master classes or to come talk to us, whether it be like alumni or whether it be other artists that they had worked with or other artists in the community. Like we had Wynton Marsalis come in one time. We had Dave Grohl come in one time. So just having that exposure and then that belief from the teachers that we could pursue this, because they were like pushing us so hard, but it wasn't out of harshness or anything. It was like, we see you all auditioned to get here. Like, we see the talent, we see the drive, and we're going to push you to get to your maximum artistic expression and like just pull what we can out of you to kind of prepare you for this lifestyle and let you explore and all of that. So it really helped shape my discipline, and it really helped shape my commitment. And like, more importantly, I think just helped shape my belief that it was something I could do. And it's not just me at home writing music for the fun of it, which is also okay. But I knew that I did want to do more with it than that. And having that system and examples kind of helped me believe that it was like music was something that I could continue on. So I graduated OSA in 2018. Shout out class of 2018. We were the best. And I went to UC Santa Cruz after I graduated OSA. I was there for, well, including the pandemic, I was there for 4 years, but I was there physically for like a year and a half. And I actually went to Santa Cruz to study poli sci and film. I had decided that I was done with music. I was a little burnt out and didn't want to pursue music anymore. I wanted to be like a lawyer or something. I don't know.
It's like gold sharpen takes your standing up quick and pace.
So the first single that I released is actually that one that I wrote, the first one I wrote after a while, and it was called Senses. And yeah, I wrote it in the trees of Santa Cruz when I was feeling sad and alone.
So happy for the moment.
And yeah, Senses, that was my first single.
Closing off my senses, I'll water them down. Push away, I think that I can give up now. And I...
But I sat down with my guitar and just started writing kind of sentences, little snippets of like the emotions I was feeling throughout the year, and a melody came out of that, and I wrote a whole song. And I realized like how healing that was and how comforting it was to be able to express all of that in such an intimate and like emotional way.
No more sky, my mother said, be careful, don't keep it inside.
My debut EP is called Better Places. The title track, Better Places, is a song on the EP, and I wrote that actually about different things and people, but the catalyst behind it was a person that I personally knew, and tragically, they passed away and it was something, it happened when I was in high school too, so this is someone within the OSA community. And it rocked a lot of us. It rocked me a lot, and obviously their family and a lot of the students. And so during that time, I wanted to reflect on this idea that everyone kind of had of like, after you suffer, after you like sacrifice, after all of the pain that you go through, there's always this promise that we kind of hold on to as a society, really, of like, there's something better to come out of this. There's like a better place at the end. And so that's where this song came from, along with different other emotions and experiences. But that was really the main one behind it, just reflecting on the idea of a better place after everything. And so all the other songs kind of follow that theme.
Oh, that I miss goes out the back door. A moment to cry. What do we believe? as if we're moving on. There's no way we can take much more. And we tried another.
What I really wanted to embody within myself with this EP is just there's importance and there's power in what you have to share, even if you don't think so. And so don't be afraid to do that. And like that, that's what I kind of learned during this process. And that's what I hope it inspires in other people too. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that I wanted to get out of this and inspire other people to do as well. Like there's power in vulnerability, there's power in gentleness. And there's power, like, even in anger and whatever frustrations are causing you to write or, like, hold back. So just share. Be obviously respectful, but, like, continue to share that with the world and with other people.
We'll save your soul for later.
That story was produced by DeAndre Ball. You can find more of his work at kalw.org/crosscurrents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sandra Halliday, Alistair Boone, James Rowlands, Ganadi, Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shireen Adel, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.